and perhaps creating a few new narratives. Welcome to the stage, Elenos, activist from Berlin.
Mischko, im Bereich der Biophysik unterwegs.
Over 10 years, tenure in biophysics.
Langer Begleiter des Kongresses und hier Welt,
long-standing
Weltruhm, Daniel Domscheit-Berg.
Person here at the Congress, Daniel Domscheit-Berg.
Last but definitely not least,
and last but definitely not least,
bei der letzten Generation.
Becky, activist at the last generation.
Hurra! Die Welt geht unter!
Yay, the world is going down.
So, hallo zusammen. Die Klimakrise.
Welcome everyone. The climate crisis is a fact. And the mechanisms that how it works are very well known, but nobody stops flying, and all of us are living an everyday life that will definitely make sure that this catastrophe will get worse. Weird, right? Maybe it's a cognitive dissonance. That we should get over somehow, so that the Global North can finally contribute its part to stop the currently unfolding crisis, or at least slow down as necessary. So how do we get from the knowledge into the dissent? To answer this question, Elena and I looked for narratives that would move people and are currently moving people. Narratives that will motivate people to change their everyday life, to do things differently. We invited two very interesting storytellers that will tell us about their side of the story. Becky, activist against the climate crisis at the last generation, and Daniel, founder of a makerspace and lifelong kindergarten, the Verstehbahnhof in Fürstenwalde. But before we start with these two very interesting stories, we will make a little philosophical detour that will help us along the way of the following stories. Hopefully, in the end, we will have a trinity of contradictions and things working together to find out what narratives we need to be able to combat the climate crisis.
Yes, welcome. I'm excited and looking forward to talking about time. We don't have much time, so my argumentation will be not very detailed. So please just listen to me first and fill in the details maybe at a later point. We already heard it. People need stories. People are narrative beings, especially in order to know how to deal with the world and to know who you are yourselves, who are the people around you, what is going on with past and future. People need not only knowledge, but also stories in which knowledge is embedded. Stories can be very differently narrated, and for example, with different frames or times, and stories can always be narrated in very different ways. The narrative that is most important for you right now is eternal growth, especially in capitalism. The problem of this is that it does not end, especially in regards to resources or individuality. Especially death is kind of an affront to this individual, which is why getting old or getting sick is failure. You can also see that in stories.
Mind upload and things like that. So people trying to extend or fight their own mortality with all means they have or may not have. So that is this narrative. And of course, this is now completely challenged. Well, it's not new that it is, but it gets harder and harder to ignore the fact that there are limits, that humans maybe are threatened by extinction, and certain groups, of course, exist that actually have this in their name. You all know of Extinction Rebellion, who points to these problems and to the urgency. So it's not surprising that at a time when these narratives are more and more in conflict, there is a kind of movement on the market of ideas. So this clash leads to turbulence, and what happens is that very strange stories are becoming very popular indeed. The fatalism leads to doomsday kind of stories, conspiracy theories, tech fantasies, because people are searching for a narrative that kind of puts them in a reasonable, sensible place. But what is worse is that there is an absence of a positive, a strong positive narrative, because that absence leads to resignation. I don't know if you experienced this with yourself or amongst your friends. This is on the rise, and it happens here at Congress too. So we would need a really positive, strong story or narrative, but which one should it be? Here is an historic case study that you could see in as an example. That was a very successful narrative. Well, don't panic, though. You are not going to escape the room in haste. It is not going to be a sermon. It's about the narrative and the time structure, because that was a very successful narrative. So in a nutshell, so the early times, the early story of Christianity was good news. Death has been overcome. It is no longer a problem. Of course, that was a really important thing. But that wasn't just cool for this Jesus dude, but everyone can rise from the dead. So this universalist approach, regardless of religion, gender, all these categories are not important anymore, all creatures welcome. And that is the next item. And the third item is the weak will be the strong, the weak ones will be the strong ones. So there is a completely different logic suddenly. But not just as a symmetric reversal, the whole logic of power is changed and we can act. And the fourth item is an expectation in the near future as well. So the earlier Christians, this is what this is about, the early Christians really think that next year or in the next 10 years, within their lifetime at least, this will happen. This seems harmless at first, but it has an enormous effect. Because what is happening is that these people live in a different sense of time. The kind of flow of time that there was is no longer there, and they live in a sense of a broken time scale, in a kind of limited deadline, as it were. So time is compressed and is given a completely new quality. And what does that do? It has an enormous effect. They leave everything that everyday life meant to them. The authorities are no longer relevant. The current laws no longer are relevant. Even families, the community with a different kind of logic unfolds a very high amount of activism. And repression and persecution is accepted. These people happily go to prison, which is something that you could take down as a kind of brand marker. So these people are going all in with their complete physicality. And that is, of course, what the other people then also recount. So the question is, what actually happened? You all know, now that we can look back, the kind of expectation of something happening in the near future was not fulfilled. The apocalypse was postponed, which led to pressure. Stories had to be rewritten. Hell and heaven had to be added to the narratives to keep people at it and at the point where this near expectation went away. So this immediate radicalism was kind of converted into a attitude that really was building up a system or even holding up the system. And here is a quote, my favorite one. If you believe that things are somehow going on after death, you do politics differently too. For example, a communist would like to create a paradise on earth to the end of their lives with all their means. This was said by a politician, conservative politician, Achim Laschet, who tried to become the German chancellor at the last election in 2021. So he was saying, who needs heaven on earth? He's a Christian politician or Christian Democrat politician. And he said, well, God will provide. And to kind of move away from this, I'm now going to have some fun. This is Christian Lindner, the current Minister of Finance in the German government. And a quote from him, kind of slightly changed. Technical innovation will take care of it, is basically the summary of that quote. Okay, so back to that question, what stories do we need to retain, to keep some agency in the times of climate crisis at the current time scale that we're looking at? I'm not a philosopher, so I will not give you any answers, but there are some recommendations where you could perhaps find interesting answers by other people. So a few items that might lead you somewhere and that you could check out. Okay, what is being said? Is it about good news? Is it a positive, optimistic, or a pessimistic kind of news? Is it for everyone? Is it a particular interest that is being addressed or someone's individual survival? There are very different stories, of course. Is it about survival or is it about good life? And what does good life mean? Is it about having comforts? Is it about having an idea? What is the role of death and vulnerability? We've had the issue of death a few times already, so that is something to look out for. What about my individual vulnerability? Is death the worst thing and the end of all, or is there another end opponent? So to turn biblical just once more, in the apocalypse, where everything is just doom and gloom and terrible things are happening, there is one point that I find the most horrifying of all. They found death and they sought death and didn't find it, is a quote from that. So the question whether death as the worst of all or the having to live aspect is the worst of all. So, and where is infinity? These narratives often have our relationship to infinity, which is somewhat abstract. Is it just a continuation of time into infinity? Or can infinity also be found in the intensity of our relationships, perhaps? That's a part I like. So, who lives, love will be immortal, this kind of approach. And I think that was a quote from somewhere, says the interpreter. Before it gets too tacky, though, are we waiting for an external creature, or do we hope for some tech billionaires to save us, or is it a collective struggle? And yes, what role does technology play? In the Christian story, that kind of fell short, didn't it? But those who bring salvation, are they demonized, or are there helpers that people are looking towards? And the last item, and that I have to finish with that, I often hear that narratives have to be lived and written down. But the question is, but this is so abstract. Narrative also embodied, or is it something that you can do in everyday life through physical work? To recount is a verb, is an action, but it's also about the small things, small gestures. The way we say goodbye to each other, perhaps, or how we deal with our leftovers, our waste, how we deal with authorities and with our bodies. All this is part of this narrative and a part of the whole story. And if there are no characters in the narrative, it's always weak. There are objects. So this Cybertruck, bulletproof by Elon Musk, tells a very different story than Greta Thunberg with her cardboard sign. So we all recount various stories, either consciously or unconsciously, and it's worth having a look at the structure of those, what we are actually carrying on and what we do about this in the face of the climate crisis, which is why I'm very happy that we'll have two more people here who will talk about their activism. And I'm looking forward to listening to them together with you. So that was my transition to Becky from The Last Generation.
Hello, I'm Becky, or Rebecca Geiger, and I'm part of the last generation before. I want you to panic. All of us know, and we've seen enough talks about the catastrophic consequences of the climate crisis. Lack of water, floods, storm floods, and people having to flee from their homes because it becomes inhabitable, and especially marginalized people will be affected. This will become the reality, and this is already the reality. As a child of a mother who was an alcoholic, I had to deal with crisis very early on. We came from quite a difficult place. We always had a heavy weight on our shoulders of having lost in this fight for the cake. And in kindergarten, we were taught that it's important to share and helping those who are weak. But this didn't match the reality I was experiencing. People were fighting against each other, and weak people didn't receive any help. People were fighting instead of becoming a community and helping each other.
Du kannst nichts verändern, es ist, wie es ist. Der Zustand, you can't change anything, it is as it is. And this creates a cognitive dissonance that we want to solve somehow. And we receive some kind of fake solutions, like you're the one responsible for your own luck, or go and work. When I was 15, I left my home, and 1 year later, my mother died. I consumed drugs, and then I did my Abitur, and I tried to climb the ladder. And in contrast to my friends who didn't make it, I found nature as a realm of peace for myself. Then, when I was studying, with every lecture I became more enraged, learning about who is creating this catastrophe and who is actually being affected by it and the lack of action. In 1995, the first climate conference happened in Berlin. You know who presided it? It was Angela Merkel. Later, she was in the government for 16 years, and she always only did what was politically possible and not what was necessary. How many opportunities for change have we already lost? Even though we did so much in the meantime, we did research, and for my doctorate thesis, I wanted to code simulations to find out the effect of the climate catastrophe. But I stopped it because we already knew enough. And outside of my studies, I always had to justify myself. Why are you so angry? And it was really difficult for me because I felt like it would be the natural reaction to get up every morning and completely panic. We have to get beyond what's politically possible and do what is actually necessary. The political sensitivities cannot be taken into account here because they don't matter in this context. Our planet will. Thank you. Our world will, without a doubt, change drastically. And it's in our hands right now if this will be a controlled and fair transition or if it will be a catastrophe. And in the second option, it will be those least responsible that are most affected. Just like my friends who really tried hard, but they can't afford to go into climate-controlled bunkers. They are the ones who could profit from a fair transition to say goodbye to the physically impossible infinite growth. I know this is kind of a contradiction to myself, but now I'm saying don't panic. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are enough examples in the history that very impossible seeming changes were actually possible, like the right for women to white or the overcoming of the apartheid. My experiences, my privileges helped me understand one thing, that it is my moral duty to do anything in my power to stop the climate crisis. Politics needs the pressure from below to actually get into action. And we at the last generation, we create this pressure. We shut down pipelines, we color private yachts, we paint the Brandenburg Gate orange, we disturb events like the Gamescom, or we block streets. We do protests that will create attention.
We are acting in a disruptive manner to change the path that we're currently taking. We force people to reflect the current state, and we create strong emotions, and lots of them negative, but this is okay, even good. And looking back at other protests, those who were protesting were never popular. Martin Luther King was hated for what he tried, for the change he tried to bring. So we're not doing this for fun. We are following a strategy, and we're using democratic measures to influence democracy within the democratic boundaries. And one of our demands is a People's Congress of randomly but representatively chosen people. Lots of movements are represented here, and our goals are overlapping. Climate justice means antifascism and feminism and social justice. Hold up, put up your hands if you want climate protection in a socially just world. All of us are the last generation before the tipping points.
Oder in anderen Bewegungen. Wir alle sollten an einem Strang ziehen, uns vernetzen.
We should all work together and dare to get into action for this change. You don't have to glue yourself to the street. 80% of our work is work from the basis. And we're preparing for the next year. We need people with skills, imagination, and let us together create an utopia instead of a dystopia. And how we could do this, you will hear in Daniel's part of the talk about Solarpunk. Please feel free to talk to me, for example, at 6 p.m. in front of Zuse. Also make sure to visit our website at letztegeneration.org. You will find everything you would need to know there. And now have fun with Daniel from the Solarpunks.
We don't have much time. So I have to try and find a solution, which you should not expect. I don't have a solution. First off, thank you so much for those great impulses. Maybe we can remember that that was Becky showed in her personal history that all of this is a consequence from wrong narratives, which haven't been wrong only for a few years, but for a very long time. And so I have three questions for you, for a baseline. Which of you knows stuff about Blade Runner, about as a pop culture phenomenon, or Mad Max? That's easy questions. The third question is, who knows children you like? That's helpful, because the actual question is,
in der Welt von Blade Runner oder Mad Max irgendwie,
who of you has wants to live or would want to live in a world of games like Blade Runner or Mad Max? Those are the two biggest pop culture phenomena. In Blade Runner there is cyberpunk, and Mad Max there is steampunk. So this is the idea that there is a high-tech and low-life kind of world in which it always rains, and we have to make sure to get not enough stuff for technical needs. Those pop culture phenomena are consistent throughout a lot of narratives. And if I look at the people here, we grew up with narratives like these. It took until 2008 until somebody said, maybe let's use a different narrative. And from steampunk, take the narrative of electricity with steam and transport it into a world made of renewable energies like solar or wind. That happened in 2008, so 15 years ago. People thought, let's write a story with that kind of narrative instead of the bad, negative one we have gotten from a lot of our other stories. So there is this niche in literature called solarpunk, which has the idea that we want to use the tools we have to create a good narrative that is still full of technology in order to create a diverse society. And I think this is an important and good contrast to the many narratives we have had. Especially in regards to political context, how do we want to make decisions when our narratives are negatively impacted? For example, in heating, which the narrative is, this is going to be totally bad and cost a lot of money and it will not work out. So why don't we talk about the jobs we could produce by focusing on renewable energies in that kind of sector, instead of thinking about the jobs that were lost or that are going to be lost when we change the laws. So we do need that positive narrative to be able to make good changes. So the narrative is the basis on which we can make good decisions for the future. That narrative doesn't have to has to not only be in the present moment, but one that will be substantial for a lot of time, so more than 20 to 30 years, because we need to have a definite endpoint at which we know how to get to. We need to have long-term dreams, and we need to have a narrative to support that. But that is not necessarily something that should not work out. This is something we should think about. What kind of series do we stream? What games do we play? Do we really want to watch war movies or play war games? Or do we want to watch films with a positive narrative, or, for example, Ted Lasso, to see that we can or could actually have a world in which everyone respects each other. So that is the issue in the main topic of solarpunk. We want to have a narrative for a world in which everyone is respected, and we need to do that. That is our job to do. No government could do that for us. We can't outsource it. Just like democracy, that only works if enough of us believe in this dream and actively work for it. And so I personally, and I'm sorry that we're in this situation where we have to be in so much panic that we glue ourselves on the street and get the aggression from a lot of people from it. I personally believe that panic or fear isn't a good way to make advances. We all need to work together to advance and make decisions in order to create enormous kinds of change. But that doesn't mean, and this is a thing I have believed for a long time, that we, especially in this community, have a special kind of responsibility, because we're privileged and we're part of a very small elite that can actually use technologies and organize and change decentralized stuff.
All diese technologischen, aber auch gesellschaftlichen Möglichkeiten auszuschöpfen, die
in order to use the social capabilities that we were given, we have to not only work on this inside of our communities, but also in the outside world. And this will not end once we drive home in the day after tomorrow. This is a responsibility which we need to transport into the way we act and think and talk with other people. So this is what I'm saying. Let's have a dream of a better world and enact that all of us together instead of panicking. We are in a bad starting situation. But that is kind of a good motivation. It would be boring if it would be too easy for us. There is a challenge, and we can master it if just enough people are working on it. It could have already went better, but it isn't not too late. So we don't have that much time. We want to talk to you about this later. So this is, you're going to learn what is now going to happen.
Right, thank you very much to these three for this very inspiring combination of three contributions. But what now? We're still in this confusing terrain. What have we learned? What have you learned? Well, I have learned that moving narratives depend on emotions, and in order to tell these stories, we need a good connection to our innermost emotions. Because it's clear, the climate crisis is not just a political, economical, or technological challenge. No, it is going to be a challenge to our emotional well-being. So, in short, I believe in order to retain your agency, you need narratives that talk about beauty that is created when we together build something, or look after something, or develop something, without having a claim as a property on what is being created. We need strength, which is visible if we show our vulnerability, and many more stories. But time is short, and I believe these are things that could be better talked about with a drink in your hand. And as I said several times, we propose, or we invite you, if you're interested, if you would like to kind of chew on these thoughts and stories, meet us at 6 p.m., 1800 hours, in front of this room, Hall Z, or Zuse. So that is the end of this story. Thank you for the time, and I'm now going to clear the stage and hand over to the Herald. And thanks for listening to our interview.